there is this question of, okay, well, how do they persist? If it's just this kind of tightrope walk across the persistence of a culture through time, maybe you can find some mechanisms for that, but it doesn't seem to have any kind of like reproductive mechanism other than just the sheer transmission of it over time. But how do you begin to tease out the mechanisms of that?
Right. Yeah. So let me try and do that a little bit. So Brandon, you really cut right to the chase. I mean, this is the issue with cultural evolution. So the question is, now that we've talked about per accidents versus per se causal chains, would cultural evolution be an example of a per se or a per accidents? So I think I pretty uncontroversially argued that genetic evolution, biological evolution, would be an example of a per accidents causal chain. It's an aggregation, an accumulation over time without the original cause having to be there anymore. But in the case of cultural, which is it? Does culture transmit or propagate per accidents, or is it per se? So I'm born, right, a newborn human being. Do I innately possess cultural traits that are an aggregation of cultural changes in the past, say the culture that I was born into? Are they passed on to me such that I have them innately, or do I have to learn them again? If I am born with them, then we could say that there's a per accidents causal chain involved in the transmission of culture. If I'm born tabula rasa, clean slate, without any cultural values or ideas related to my culture, then we can say that if I acquire cultural traits or get cultural ideas, then they happen in a per se fashion because some new event had to occur in order for me to acquire those traits. So what's interesting about this is it really speaks to a fundamental question, which is by no means settled. It's one of the problems in, if not in philosophy, certainly in other disciplines, language acquisition, anthropology, sociology. Are human beings born tabula rasa, or are they born already knowing stuff? And if they're born already knowing stuff, is that stuff, does it somehow come from their culture? And I'm not going to be able to answer that question, but I'm raising the question. And that's, you know, one way of expressing this question is the culture transmitted through per accidents or per se causal chains. So with biological evolution, pretty clearly, uncontroversially, per accidents causal chains. But with cultural evolution, suddenly we don't know. So let me give a couple examples where some of the scholars, right, current contemporary scholars, have commented about this. And I'm not sure if the comments are adequate or they're consistent either, which is another problem. So Joe Heinrich says that, you know, in this parallel line of cultural evolution, the culture is acquired partly through perception, but also can be acquired genetically, because he says there's a mixing of cultural and biological evolution. And so let me give you an example of the type of claim Joe Heinrich makes. He says that biology favors the capacity for culture. So biological natural selection has selected for human characteristics which have the capacity for culture. And that's one of his arguments. But my response to that is there's a distinction between the capacity for culture. I think you already alluded to this, you guys. A capacity for culture is distinct from the content of the culture. So it's not too hard to accept that claim that human beings have biologically evolved in a per accidents fashion such that we have the brains, the brain power, the power of consciousness and so on, power of the mind to think and develop ideas and develop culture to relate to other people and collectively to create, stories and values and laws and all the things that we might say are, you know, content of culture. But that's a different argument than saying that the contents of the culture, right, the actual cultural values, the actual cultural ideas, somehow those are transmitted genetically. That's quite a different claim, the latter, and would really need to be would be to be demonstrated with some, you know, convincing evidence to say that ideas are themselves transmitted in a per accident fashion such that when I am born as a brand new human being, that I'm already born imbued with ideas from my culture. It's a controversial topic, whether that actually happens. Some people believe it does happen, but it's not at all self-evident. It's not at all uncontroversial. However, it's probably uncontroversial that the capacity for culture, the brain power, right, the ability to be rational beings and so on, is something that has evolved genetically. So it's complicated in the case of culture. What Daniel Dennett says, he also has a lot to say about cultural evolution. The way he tries to solve this problem, the problem being, how is culture propagated, right? How does it happen? Or is it propagated? Is it per accidents or per se? Daniel Dennett says that in the cultural realm, there's an analogy to genes, or there's analogies to DNA and genes. So in the biological world, you have DNA, and then DNA contains genes. The DNA is sort of like the envelope, and the genes are the information which specify the parameters of the organism. So Daniel Dennett says, well, we have an analogy in culture that explains how culture is propagated. And he said, imagine ink and a poem written in ink. The ink is the DNA, and the poem is like the gene, but we're going to call it a meme. A meme is the analog to a gene. So culture is transmitted through physical objects like artifacts, paper, pens, it's the media, right? The media which contains the information. So the information, the poem, the sound, the music, the art, the information in the language, the story, you know, what you learn at school, all that stuff are analogous to genes. The classroom you sit in, the paper the book is written on, those would be analogous to DNA. That's what Dennett offers as a solution for how culture is transmitted, and it's analogous to how physical characteristics of organisms are transmitted from generation to generation. Dennett gives credit to Richard Dawkins for much of that.
I do think that it's an interesting theory. What was going through my mind, Brandon earlier brought up the concept of language, and I was thinking that in a sense, language is its own per se cause, in the sense that when a language is no longer spoken, in a way it ceases to exist, but then it is through the act of speaking that the language itself is preserved. By the act of it existing, it brings itself into being. Well, I mean, of course, it's dependent on human beings to carry that forward. But if you're born into a culture and you learn to speak a language, you don't have conscious control of forgetting that language. You could invent your own language in a way, and most people do. In a way, that's what we're doing as philosophers, trying to create new language, incorporating other people's new parts of language and concepts that we haven't arrived at from other people. But the overall point there that I would like to make is that if language itself can be seen as a per se cause, then all of these memes, they only exist because they are a part of the language, and without the language they wouldn't exist. Although I don't think that says anything about the idea of per accident ideas that certain individuals come up with, write down, or transmit to a group of people. And then if other people are like, oh, well, if I want to speak of a specific idea, then we have to credit either a specific person for that, or we know that it came from a specific person, that it didn't come from ourselves. I think the question of whether culture is per se or per accident is interesting, and we have to kind of deal with the language problem about what that is in order to solve it concretely.
Dennett admits that, I don't know if he would say it's an admission, but he says that memes, right, the information of culture is acquired by perception, whereas genes, the information of biology, is acquired, well, genetically. So seems to me that from my point of view, Dennett is acknowledging that biological evolution happens per accident, whereas cultural evolution happens per se. And I say that it's per se because it doesn't happen unless someone now, currently, something or someone is providing the stimulus. So if a child is born tabula rasa, so to speak, without any cultural information and has to learn it, which is what Dennett says happens. Dennett says it happens. The learning of cultural information happens through perception. So perception being a child hears things, sees things, feels things, smells things, touches things, all of these types of perceptions through the sense organs. Unless that happens, the child will not acquire the cultural ideas. So it seems to me that Dennett is outlining here a per se causal chain, which is quite distinct from the per accident causal chain of biological evolution. So for whatever it's worth, it seems like even Dennett acknowledges that there's a fundamental distinction between cultural evolution and biological evolution. Now, I'm not saying that that's a fatal distinction in some way. I'm not saying that it means there is no cultural evolution. It's just a difference, which, it's kind of curious what to do with that fundamental difference. It certainly says you can't draw, a complete analogy between the two, and because there's a fundamental difference, so they're not analogous. It doesn't mean that cultural evolution doesn't happen, but it's certainly not analogous. So Dennett kind of, in my view, and my critique is that he sort of wants it both ways. He wants to say that, well, we have an analogy to biological evolution in cultural evolution, and the memes of cultural evolution are analogous to the genes of biological evolution. And the paper or the ink in cultural evolution, or the, social media site or whatever it might be, is analogous to the DNA in biological evolution. But he also admits that, well, in a fundamental way, they're not analogous because culture needs to be learned anew by each generation from some, accumulation of past information, presumably through the artifacts and the paper and the ink and the social media and all those things, then the books and the print and all the DNA, the DNA analog, and presumably that's how it's transmitted. But in biological evolution, no need for that. You're born with it. It means that they're not analogous.
I had an example that came to mind of an instance that should appear to be cultural evolution per accidens, and that would be the sea people. Remember the sea people who I think they attack or bother the Egyptians, but we don't know who the sea people really are. Well, the sea people have kind of gone, or we don't know, we don't really have any kind of material facts, but our language, our sort of store of knowledge of things has persisted. Despite the fact that the sea people have gone, we have this cultural artifact, the word, and our sort of stories of the sea people. Now, that seems like we have a per accidens phenomenon, because the thing that is describing this is gone. I mean, I guess you could think of anything else too, like an extinct species or something like that, or images of them. That was just the vivid thing that kind of came to mind. I thought that this might actually be a per accidens cause, but it might not be, because the things that the sea people would have had to have left behind, or the reports of the sea people, would have to enter into our language somehow. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to persist in the way that they do. They would just kind of fall off the side if they were written into a language that no one spoke and we couldn't decipher it. It would stop being a cultural phenomenon and in a way kind of die, no longer able to propagate its memes in a way. So that seems to place it back within the per se causal relation. So this is very difficult to get out of. It's difficult to get out of thinking of cultural evolution in a per se way.
I think one of the ramifications or the consequences of considering cultural evolution to be acquired only through perception is that it sort of places culture in somewhat of an immaterial realm. Sort of reminds me of like dualism with respect to philosophy of mind. Like culture is out there in the ether someplace, and it's not a physical thing. It's not transmitted physically. It's just sort of like word of mouth or something, or word of paper, or word of media, word of electronics, and it's extrinsic to human beings, which is kind of curious, because it seems like culture is thought to be, you know, and obviously is so important to human society, the way humans behave. You know, it's an existential issue for humans. But so how can it be so sort of like smoke? You know, it's like if it's actually happened, I think, in like, you know, cultures have had like, there's examples, is it, you know, ancient Egypt or the Mayan culture, there's examples of, you know, cultures that have had some pretty advanced technology and science. And then when the culture died out, a lot of that information disappeared. That'd be some interesting research. I know those might be a couple examples. And we're constantly discovering, you know, like archaeologists and anthropologists are frequently discovering surprising technology and surprising, you know, levels of science that some historical cultures have had that we didn't know they had, but it was sort of lost because the artifacts were gone, right? The hieroglyphics, if they're very ancient, or the places where they recorded that information, those the media became obscured or disappeared or only discovered later. So it just seems like culture has this kind of strange kind of like smoke quality. It's like now you see it, now you don't. And yet at the same time, it's like so central to our being as cultural beings, as social beings. It causes me to wonder whether we're missing something here. Is there something more permanent or durable or tangible about culture than just word of mouth per se transmission, where if I don't perceive, then there is no culture for me. I don't have any cultural ideas unless I perceive them, as opposed to like the size of my nose or the size of my brain or the size of my hands, which is I'm born with them. I don't have to, you know, there's no way around it. Is culture really that like something that can evaporate like that, can appear or not appear, depending on whether I read a book or whether I go to school? I suppose that's why like school is so important, right? Because if you don't go to school, then you're not going to know the cultural information that you need, information that you need to know in order to survive, in order to get by. But it just seems like I have no thesis here at this moment, other than it just seems to raise a lot of issues. This idea of cultural evolution, this raises a lot of problems. There's a lot of unknowns that aren't really raised so much, that aren't a problem with biological evolution. It's very, the physical world is very solid, right? It's very, unless you're an idealist, I think that the physical world's all made up. But barring that, I mean, there's something very tangible, right? And something that we can really study scientifically in the physical world. But when it comes to culture, if you believe that culture is only acquired through perception, it just seems to be in a very kind of weird, almost like supernatural realm or something.
You have to be educated into a culture. There is an idea of certain people being uncultured, certain other people being of a high culture. There's ideas of there are certain degrees or levels of proficiency with regard to languages or different languages. You can consider mathematics as a language. You can consider science as a language with distinct processes and distinct means of understanding concepts that, if you aren't educated in those concepts, don't make any sense. That we can lose science, we can lose mathematics if we lose the ability to transmit the education of those things onto future generations and to communicate those things to society. As long as human beings are around, there is like such a thing as natural education, right? There is such a thing as what a human being will naturally develop into and learn apart from what other people tell them they have to learn or force them to learn that they wouldn't otherwise learn. So those types of things, you could say, form a proto-culture or a basic form of values that values might not be the word, perception, an identity that is built on your perceptions apart from your education, which everyone has some kind of baseline. So you could say that everyone has this baseline of proficiency of language without instruction. And that gives us, it's like, okay, well then we can communicate. I guess this is the thing. I think I understand now why he says that cultural evolution proceeds through perception and not through language, because you can't assume language to be a carrier mechanism. So, but if you assume perception first, then this works truly with animals. It would work truly in the period of human prehistory, where language wasn't as developed. And then you could say that social evolution is in fact the cause of language.
Another way to explain the problem is in the way that one of my favorite philosophers, contemporary philosophers, John Searle from UC Berkeley, the way he describes the distinction between what he calls ontologically objective versus ontologically subjective entities. An example, I think he gives it, if you take a $20 bill, right? Physically, it consists of, I guess, ink on, what is it, paper or a combination of paper or plastic or something. The Canadian ones are largely plastic. And that's the physical, those are the physical media that you know, constitute the money. There's a value. It's worth, you know, it's worth $20. But the value is distinct from the physical media upon, you know, with which the money is made. So the physical part, the physical media or the medium, Searle would say, is ontologically objective. Another way to say that would be that it's observer independent. So whether or not somebody sees it or knows about it or knows anything about it, there is a physical thing there. Presumably, if all human beings or all living things in the earth disappeared, that physical thing would still be sitting there. Its existence, right? Its ontology is not dependent upon being perceived by anything else or anybody else. So it's observer independent, it's ontologically objective. But the value of the money, that it's worth $20, that I can take it to the store and hand it over and get some stuff in return, the value of the money is ontologically subjective and it's observer dependent. It only depends on people agreeing in their heads, right? It depends on culture. Culture assigns value to that physical thing. That's another way of sort of characterizing this distinction between biology and culture when it comes to evolution. Biological evolution, we might say, is ontologically objective. It's physical stuff happening. Whereas culture exists only in people's minds. It's like money, the value of money. It's like the $20. So it's ontologically subjective. So this lineage of biological evolution is an ontologically objective phenomenon, whereas this lineage, this line of cultural evolution is ontologically subjective and literally exists only in people's minds. If there were no people, the culture, there'd be no culture. So this is obviously going to take a part three. I'm going to have to do part three because we have to stop here, but I want to go on to how might we resolve some of these questions or dilemmas. I'm going to have my own hypothesis about how we might help resolve these issues with the complications of cultural evolution. Thank you very much, Aaron Wang. Thank you, Brandon Brownlee. I'm Michael Robert Kaditz. You've been listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. You can find the Canadian Philosophy Show at tcps.podbean.com and on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please email us at hello@philosophyshow.ca.
Dear listeners, as you may have heard, Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, is blocking Canadian access to all content created by news providers, including this radio station, in response to the Online Broadcasting Act. Access to local news and information matters to everyone, and while radio stations use their airwaves to keep you informed, we also use social media to share local news, events, and initiatives, and even content about our upcoming programming. We need you to write your MP and convey your concerns. Learn more and find a letter template for your MP on our website. Thank you for your support. Is it on?